The Sour Hour is meant for the serious brewer. The Sour Hour may contain some seriously funkified content. The Sour Hour is not for the faint of heart. So exercise some damn discretion, would you please? Sheesh. And now, here's the Sour Hour with Jay Goodwin.
That time. A little hectic start to the show today.
Oh my God.
We were in here recording the Hop and Brew School right before this. Some other podcast on the Brewing Network, I guess.
One of the dozens and dozens.
Justin was here. So that was great. But it's that time. It's Sour Hour on the Brewing Network. I'm your host, Jay, here live at the Brewing Network Studios in downtown Concord. Bevo's in the house. Hey, Bevo.
Hi, Beve.
Yeah, she's not plugged in, perfect, but she's here. Existing. Scott's here. Hey, Scott.
Hi.
And tonight's guest, we have Reuben's Brews on the show.
Very excited to have those guys here.
Hi, guys. I actually was listening. I was just doing something else away from the microphone.
And that's More Information with Beverly Moore.
More Information with me, Beverly Moore.
A day late and a dollar short.
That one was a dollar short. It was it's the spinning rainbow wheel of death that you get on the Apple desktops. Good. This program experiences it frequently.
And I'm checking the Apple stock just went down 3%. No.
So did the entire rest of the stock market. Yeah.
Yeah.
4,000 points.
We also have Chris from Oregon Fruit.
We do. We got a loaded show, and for good reason. I don't know if you noticed that I gave you the big over-the-shoulder double point for it's time, the intro. And do you know why?
Yeah, I do know why. Because can we get drum roll?
Okay,
enough. Evo liked it.
That was terrible.
What I had to say. Drum roll, and then, trumpets.
Okay, here, hold on.
Big news.
There's no cymbal, so just so you know.
There's no cymbal?
No cymbal.
This is like one of the seven rings of hell. Can you just do,
Oh, God.
This is episode 100!
Yes!
Can't you tell?
Yeah, it's amongst the worst so far.
Yeah, we're getting really good at this. Dun, dun, trumpets. Oh, God.
100 episodes,
it,
dude. Yeah, we did. Yeah. Man, what a ride. What a ride. 5 years, 100 shows.
Cool, I quit.
Yeah, I know. I think Corolla did 5,000 in the same amount of time.
Yeah.
100. What an accomplishment.
But we're out here. And join in. You can... We're not doing, there's no phones, so join us in the chat.
Skype. Sure,
us.
I'll launch Skype.
Brewing Network. Feedback, scott@thebrewingnetwork.com, jay@thebrewingnetwork.com. That's the best format. That's the one you guys like. We get lots of nice emails. You can watch us at brewingnetwork.com/TV, where I'm attempting to not drift too far. We're at an odd angle today. Listen live, the Brewing Network app. Search BN Mobile. Subscribe and leave feedback on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe to podcasts. And that might bring us to Review of the Week.
Probably the biggest highlight of the show so far, above these 100 episodes, is that.
Yeah, that's it.
This review is from BMW88. He says, opening a brewery...
Humble brag.
It's a 1988 BMW. It's got 900,000 miles on it. It's not that great. Opening a brewery in a couple of months in Georgia.
He sold that BMW. He's flush with cash.
Yeah, I'll get some tanks and all the equipment I need and payroll. No problem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 1988 325i. It's only been rebuilt a couple times.
Pretty sure that was my dad's car.
He said, this show has been a valuable resource for figuring out how to, hopefully, do right by my favorite beer style. I'm on episode 34, but I also listen to new episodes as they get posted. This show is much better than any other BN show, especially The Session. 3 out of 5 stars.
By the way, during the last show, which Justin also hosts, he's like, Jay, off the air, I'm going to show you the numbers. And I was like, you should check the numbers, bro, because we're coming after you.
Yeah, we are.
Coming for that number one spot.
By the time, what is The Session on, year 14 or whatever it is? Mm-hmm. By the time we get to 14 years,
Yeah, we're like four?
Yeah, not even five yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're still building our base, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Look out, Justin. Coming for you.
He's still out there. He's going to be late to go to... Wait, he's got a doctor's appointment in 5 minutes.
What kind of... Like a real doctor?
Yeah, he said he has a doctor's appointment at 5:30.
Hmm.
We need to find out more...
that kind of doctor.
More
that's
information?
What I thought.
Oh, is it local? It's like walking distance?
I'm assuming it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you go find out?
No.
More information.
And now, more information.
That's the information.
Can it be less information? Because nobody cares.
You're only here for another hour, so.
It's true.
Right.
It would just be great if you
You're
could
wasting time.
You're burning it, yeah.
If you could produce that information. That's a yes, okay.
More information.
Is that the end of the review?
Yeah, that is. Yes, thank you for the review,
no
BMW 88. We appreciate it a lot. Yeah, no, there's no rejoiner in this review.
All right.
The man likes the show but doesn't follow directions.
Well, that's okay.
I do like the part, but you see, look at this, Jay. He says, the title of the review is Best BN Show, and it's a five-star review, but he titles it three stars. That's a guy who listens carefully.
Nice.
Nice, dude.
Yeah, thank you very much. We love your feedback. Continue to leave it. We got a lot to get to.
Yeah, we do.
We're running late tonight,
yes.
So I'm just going to do some quick things off the top, which includes thanking one of our great sponsors, the Wine and Hop Shop, wineandhop.com, locally owned and operated for over 40 years. Most items are shipped within 24 hours. BN listeners get a flat $8 shipping rate for orders under 25 pounds. Just enter BN shipping in the notes field of the shopping cart. Discounts can be taken out after checkout. Madison residents, order your homebrew supplies online at wineandhop.com. Pick them up at Working Draft Beer Company, located on Wilson Street, right across from Central Park. We'll waive the shipping, give you half off your first beer. Wine and Hop Shop, wineandhop.com.
We should mention on the last show, Modern Times, guesting on the last show.
That was a great show. Andrew came in studio. That was awesome.
Hey, this is Andrew from Modern Times Beer on the Sour Hour. Okay, one more time.
That was we spent about 45 minutes in the studio afterwards trying to get
the liners. You'd be proud of me after the Hop School show, which I should check that one off too. I was like, Justin, if Scott were in here, he'd want me to tell you to get liners.
Yes.
And I did. And he
yeah,
did.
Buddy.
Yeah.
Jay, on 100, it.
100 shows in, I got it.
Yeah, brother.
All right, let's get to a break because it's a lot of stuff Bevo didn't get us. Information, water, beer,
vape pens.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I said I would get the water. I was just waiting for a break. You don't need a vape pen.
Let's get to a break. We'll be
cares.
Right back on the Sour Hour, Bevo.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
Do you like beer? They make beer.
Watch out!
Do you like friends and fun? They make friends and fun.
Watch out!
Do you still like to have a good time? The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
The 21st Amendment in San Francisco, located at 563 2nd Street, two blocks from the building where baseball is seen and played. Try their beers in the pub or try them in the can. Featuring
Monk's Blood.
Made with real monk.
Watch out!
So why not have the best time of your life? Go to the 21A and Sean O'Sullivan will personally greet you with a can of
Monk's Blood. The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
This advertisement is not in any way affiliated nor associated with the 21st Amendment Bar and Pub, nor its subsidiaries or affiliates. This telecast is not copywritten by the 21st Amendment for the private use of the Brewing Network. Any use of this telecast without Jamil Zainashev's consent is prohibited. Suck it, JP.
Hey, this is Avery with Two Brown Thumbs from Jester King Brewery in Austin, Texas. You're listening to The Sour Hour on the Brewing Network.
All right, we're back. Minor technical difficulty.
What now?
Adam's headset.
Yeah. Is it
just
turned
one?
Down?
One side.
Oh.
That's fine.
That's always rocket, something.
Rocket
around
the
here, man.
Segment, and then we'll fix it in the break.
Yeah, we'll fix it at the break. Can you tolerate
Actually,
it?
I think it might be those because I was using them earlier and was having the same problem.
It's the headset?
It might just be the headphones.
Is there another one you can swap it out for real quick?
You can use my in-ears. That's all I have.
It's a professional outfit.
I know. I'm sorry.
All right, we'll rock with it. I can trade you because I'm, you know, pro status. All right.
That's our half welcome to you, Adam.
And if, in case we cut this out, 3, 2, 1. Oh, we're back on the show.
We run a clean outfit.
Episode 100.
Yeah.
Yes, 100 episodes.
Nice.
Welcome.
And we got a full house for number 100. We're keeping it 100 right now, obviously. Got our old friend Chris from Oregon Fruit. How's
Howdy.
It going?
And good to see you.
A bunch of the guys from Reuben's Brews, who are our brewer guests on the show tonight. Why don't we go around the table, have you guys introduce yourselves, and then just tell us what your jobs are at the brewery.
Sure. I'm Adam. I do what anybody else doesn't do. So I founded the brewery with my wife back in 2011.
Nice.
I'm James McDermott, head brewer at Reuben's Brews. So I kind of just help keep everything moving, make sure the beer gets made, and do the stuff that Adam doesn't do, I guess.
Yeah. Hey, I'm Thor Stoddard. I'm in charge of special projects as well as a brewer. Yeah, I kind of do a lot of all the other things the first two didn't do.
It's a good system. It's the what the mongoose eats the snake or kind of system. You know what I'm referring
Rikki
to?
Rikki Tikki Tavi?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That's the only mongoose reference I know.
Yeah. So there's elephants just running all over the Reuben's Brews. <Bruce. laughs> So, I mean, first question, who's Reuben?
Reuben's my son's name. So I was a home brewer at the start and used to listen, well, still do listen to this show and other shows with the Brewing Network. But when I was a home brewer, we got a chance to pour at a commercial festival, my wife and I. And the day before they were, as home brewers, the day before they were going to come up with the program, they sent us an email saying, well, what's your name for your brewery? It can't be just Grace and Adam. And we had one night to think about it, and we thought, well, I started brewing when our son was born, and it's stuck since then because we had a few hundred people following us. We won the People's Choice there, and then we're getting people asking for our beer, and yeah, the rest is history.
That's awesome. You guys have been doing, I've been an admirer from afar for quite a while, been doing a lot of winning along the way, and I think, in fact, including the beer that's in front of us right now.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So we're drinking Algoza. We first brewed this in... for our third anniversary, so in 2015, I spent a lot of time coming up with the process, and a lot of that research was listening to this show back in the day, actually.
First mistake.
It worked for us.
He had to make a lot of tweaks to produce this beer.
No, but literally, from the first few episodes that you had were predominantly around kettle souring, and learned from that, came up with our own process. The first batch we brewed, I thought, damn, that's pretty close to style, like per the definitions. Nice. So we entered it, and it won gold at GABF. So that's kind of validated that thought. Yeah, and then that was on our small system. And then that year, we actually, the next year, we opened another brewery, and we put it on the bigger system. And then that year, won gold at GABF. So kind of nice.
Yeah, crazy to do between two different systems, especially, you know, just bang, bang like that and no gaps, which is... You know, a testament to how you guys are doing things, for sure.
It's a lot of luck as well, right? it's like poker, right?
Yeah. You gotta be good, but you got to run good, too.
Yeah.
It's luck when other people win. Yeah. That's for sure.
Can I ask this before we get into more specifics about how this is made? Because moving along, I keyed in on you saying, I started homebrewing when Reuben was born.
Yeah.
How does that work? How do we have time to homebrew? Yeah, it seems like we brewed up until he was born.
I got a very forgiving wife, I think.
You know? You were like, now's a better time than ever to pick up a hobby?
She chose it. Yeah, so she got me the kit. Her and Reuben, inverted commas, got me the kit to get started. When he was born, it was like my first birthday after that, or Christmas or something. I can't remember exactly which one. And it was a put up or shut up type moment. So I had been training my palate over a long, long period of time and saying how I'd like to change this commercial beer or that commercial beer and like how we should do this or that to that beer. And it was like, well, okay, here you go. do it or don't do it or just shut up about it.
Either way, shut up about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent.
But you know, it was maybe a double bluff that didn't work, but no.
So, James, you're the head brewer, and maybe you could give us kind of a virtual tour of the brewery, not only from, you know, kind of the physical side of things, but also, you know, what other, you know, obviously we're drinking this beer, but what other beers in general, doesn't have to be sour beer, that you guys produce, and, you know, what do you think your brewery is known for?
Yeah, I think kind of speaking to that, what other beers do we make? I think that's kind of, we go for being able to do everything. And do everything as well as we can and to the best of our abilities and just kind of keep refining it. And that's kind of, I think, one of our hallmarks is really pushing to that. And okay, there's a new style. Great. Let's get into it really aggressively and learn it and figure it out and have it on tap if we can. And, you know, we have usually, you know, in our main tap room, we have always, you know, at least 24 beers on tap. And we're always kind of struggling to find room to fit the rest of our beers on. And, you know, I think that's kind of one of the big things that defines us. We're lucky because we have three brewing locations now, all located within like a quarter mile of each other. Most of them within like a block and a half. Wow. It's a cool.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. They've taken over Ballard in Seattle.
Yeah. Lease by lease until we have no money.
Is City Hall for sale?
Soon. But
we'll edit that out.
So we have a 5-barrel, we have a 15-barrel, and we have a newly installed 30-barrel system, which is like, it's such a nice, you know, kind of playground because we don't ever feel limited that we can't do something because we'd have too much beer or whatever. So, you know, that's something that we definitely focus on. So, you know, our staff kind of have all experienced all those different breweries. We're kind of in this growing phase right now. We just installed the 30-barrel system in December of this past year. So we're in that like teenage phase right now of like, all right, we're figuring it out, making sure we're like everything's working and everyone's here now. And so, that's been a really cool process, but, so we're just kind of like essentially continuing to, kind of give ourselves the ability to brew more beer as well. That was a big kind of push for this larger brewery was, okay, that'll let us do, you know, some of our core beers and, you know, some of our seasonals that you know, we send out to distribution, and it lets us free up the other two breweries to really just focus on whatever crazy ideas we come up with next. Not crazy, but, you know, fun and good. But, yeah, that's kind of our deal.
Well, it sounds like maybe that's a little bit more what you focus on, Thor, is the crazy things. And, you know, maybe just if you have all those taps, keeping a lot of that supplied and keeping the innovation part going.
Yeah. So a lot of what I do is working on the two smaller systems, specifically the smallest 5-barrel system that we have, being able to brew those. And, you know, every beer that we brew off of that seems to be something different. And we're constantly changing that over time. And then working on a lot of the barrel aging program as well.
Awesome. And I think we've got at least four customers in the room for Chris, who's good mm-hmm. enough to join us and also support our podcast. What's new at Oregon Fruit, Chris?
Well, a lot of things are happening with innovation across the North American craft brew scene, and we're fortunate enough to be able to work with thousands of brewers and distillers and cider makers. And what's new for us is just helping them continue to innovate, which I think for a lot of craft brewers right now is really the key to sustaining growth and hopefully, you know, cutting into new potential growth categories. So for us, it's just a ton of fun.
So does innovating mean new fruits that no one ever thought of or new ways to process or both?
All fruits have been thought of, but
yeah, I was going to say, like, what can be new?
I've got a new idea.
I guess it depends on where you are. But what we try to do is we try to source. I mean, it's very difficult to find something new these days. What we try to do is come up with something that the brewers will really truly like and be able to integrate into their recipes that doesn't turn people off, but turns people on to the idea of fruit beers being not something that's a fad, but something that's a beer style that's here to stay for a long time.
If it's anything like, you know, I don't know how you guys, what your production breakdown is like, but, you know, often, I don't know, I've been talking to a lot of brewers lately, and it's a lot of, well, 75% of the beers we make or 85% of the beers we make are beers that, you know, for better or worse, it's like, okay, here's what our customers are telling us that they really enjoy. And you know, it sells well at the brewery, and that's all great. Maybe the smaller percentage is the brewer's beer, as we like to say, which is usually the beer that doesn't sell quite as well. But, you know, we tend to all like kind of drinking it together. I wonder if, you know, from the fruit perspective, are there much more popular and much less popular fruit varietals that you're seeing kind of fly out the door?
Well, the good news is that the tropicals have really sort of been a big hit for everybody. We're seeing the mangoes, pink guava, pineapple, passion fruit really becoming a mainstay for a lot of year-round annual beers that people just, they don't fall off the shelves. They actually are maintaining sort of their shelf space. Dark fruits for me are really sort of the old new, because if you take a look at products like, you know, or fruits like blackcurrant or boysenberry, you know, products that really have, you know, sort of been in the sort of shadows, those are becoming quite popular. Not only are the fruits amazing, but what the brewers can do with them in a various styles is really quite remarkable.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the tropical fruits especially are, I don't know how you guys have been experiencing it, but, you know, of course, IPA is dominant and, you know, we're on a sour beer show, but we're making sour IPA now.
I just had one.
About, you know, fruited sour IPA and all this stuff. And, you know, I think the tropical fruits match really well with a lot of the hops that we've been using. What are you guys' favorite fruits to match with hops or even in your sour beers?
I think one of my favorite ones is guava right now. The, like, the pepper you get from it and the, like, kind of like that, like, sweet tart character as well, I really enjoyed.
I don't know if you caught that, Jay, but both of us looked at Adam waiting for an answer, and Adam shot a look at his lackeys like, hey, you take this one, guys. This is what Jay does, too. I'm like, so what about this, Jay? And he's like, I don't know, man. Ask my crew.
Yeah. No, but, you know, that guava we get for our Guava Happens, our guava comes from Oregon Fruit, and we've been lucky enough to win a medal for that one. And I'll be honest, it's like all the guava. I mean, the beer we made was nice, and I don't even really like guava that much, me personally, because some of the more funky tropical fruit varietals are like a little too much for me.
Passion fruit. What do you mean, as an additive?
The papaya, the guava.
Do you mean eating it as a fruit, like with breakfast, or do you mean as a fruit
overall,
additive?
Overall. But even the guava beer, I liked it because it was so tasty. Yeah.
Well, I'm with you in that. I'm not gonna spoon guava, you know, and just as part of my breakfast or whatever, but as a beer,
the night takes us.
The night is young, but as an adjunct for sour beer, I find it delightful.
I loved it. Yeah. And it's so complex, and it just fits in with what we're doing. So that's awesome. Let's do a question.
Sure.
And,
oh, here, you know what? Here, I got a text from Dr. Lambic. Okay. Yes, I did.
It's just about to
read it verbatim, just because it'll be funny. Jay's now reading off of my iPhone here.
I like that it's. So on the iPhone, you know, you have the initials, and it's MM for Matt Miller, mm-hmm. but then right underneath, Dr. Lambic.
Dr. Lambic.
I'm thinking something shortened like this. Colon. Quote. Did you want me to
read
that?
Yes, I did. Punctuation included. Yes, thank you.
This question and all questions brought to you by Dr. Lambic of sourbeerblog.com. Check out sourbeerblog for in-depth articles. Chris, anytime you want to text us during the show, this is fine too. In-depth articles on brewing and blending sour beer. And now, I mean, I'm just reading this off the top.
Yes.
I mean, thinking of this off the top of my head.
From the heart.
Blending sour beers. And now you can taste Dr. Lambic's beers in person by visiting Mellow Mink Brewing in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania. Mellow Mink Brewing. MellowMink.com.
This is Ben from Stevens Point, Wisconsin. He says, hey, all, love the show. As a new brewer, it has made me take a risk to brew my first sour beer.
By the way, just go buy a Working Draft Beer Company to get your wine and hops.
So true. WineandHop.com. He said, I'm brewing my first sour beer, and I took my OG reading, which came back as 1020. I was expecting 1050-ish. I am too new to know what I did wrong. I followed the recipe. Any ideas or suggestions?
Yeah, not necessarily a sour beer question, but I would say if I remember my early days of doing all grain brewing, I would say you ran off too fast. If you were sparging and running off, so you were just kind of, the water was going too fast over the grain, unless you added a bunch of water afterwards. But even then, like, the initial mash just might have been enough to be 1020. So maybe now I'm backtracking and it was a miscalculation. Now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know. What do you guys think?
Maybe it was a 3-gallon batch that he tried to make a 5-gallon batch out of?
The recipe was supposed to be for 3.
Maybe.
Let's turn this into, like, the reason he's writing is because presumably this is his base beer, right, for whatever he's going to sour. And he didn't specify what his process was going to be, if he was going to pitch bottle dregs or something. But what would happen if he was going to take some, like, we're now going to sour it, but we're going to do it from 1050? What are some problems he would run into if that OG was too high?
Depends what the bittering is. It depends how you design recipes, right? So you can have a starting gravity to bitterness ratio. Maybe that's how you go. Or you're just looking for a bitterness ratio. If you're that low, boy, I would really want my recipe to be like 50% adjunct, like flake corn or oats and wheat and stuff like that. I'm guessing it wasn't. So it's going to be really thin. I would dump it.
Start over. Advice,
but
I'd agree. You can't really recover from that.
No.
Spot, I don't think.
Low.
But just know you're not alone. And yeah, that happens. I think one of the most anxious things when you're home brewing is the first runnings, the middle runnings, the last runnings. And it's like, okay, wait, what's going on here? And then you take the kettle reading and it's like, yeah, that was low.
Yeah.
Oops.
That's good to get that first one out of the way and, you know, kind of troubleshoot from there. I think that's pretty common. You know,
It was his 100th brew.
Actually. Oh, no, I'm sorry.
None of us can figure it out. After 100 times, we still don't know.
I don't know.
Retire. That's what we'll do.
I always used to batch sparge.
Yeah.
So I would always take a gravity reading of the initial lauter, and then I'd know where I was, like whether I've gone high or low relative to the past, and I know where I finish. You need data points, right? It's all about data points or repetibility.
And I never batch sparge, but if you do that and then you run into the kettle, take that gravity, could you add actually more grain and do like a second mash almost? Or what if you were low? Like how would you adjust?
Well, I would adjust by not maybe sparging as much, you know, because I would never be 60% off. You know, mm-hmm. I'd hope not to be.
Yeah,
right.
Or you could add some extract, right, to bump it up if you're close. So it's a yield or an extract.
And so you were saying under sparge and then under lauter on that second round, basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's all luck anyway, right?
Yeah.
It's just luck.
Yeah. Also, if you don't want to use dextrose, I know some brewers are using brewer's crystals, which has not the color, but some of the same body of, or the same carbohydrate makeup of wort. So you could do one of those two things, but you're going to have a dry beer, essentially. So maybe if you have the choice, because all homebrewers have different yeast strains to pick from, obviously the day brew, no. Maybe something that's going to have a high finishing gravity, and it's like a 2% English bitter or something like that. I don't know. But good luck. Let us know how it goes.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. Thanks for writing in.
And are we going to take a break?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's do it.
We'll be right back on the Sour Hour.
For nearly 40 years, one organization has had your back. The American Homebrewers Association. Are you a member? Why not? Join the more than 40,000 brewers who enjoy all the American Homebrewers Association has to offer. Like Zymergy Magazine, in print and online, plus the Zymergy app. Zymergy is the leading publication for amateur brewers around the world. Supporters also get member deals at their local breweries, bars, and homebrew shops. These alone quickly pay for your membership. You'll also get great member-only resources at homebrewersassociation.org and access to AHA events like the National Homebrewers Conference and the National Homebrew Competition. The American Homebrewers Association promotes the hobby of homebrewing, protects the interests of homebrewers, and brings beer lovers together. Become a member today. It costs less than a batch of beer and gives back so much more. Visit homebrewersassociation.org.
You more of our wonderful sponsors. Neshaminy Creek Brewing. They've been brewing award-winning beers in Croydon, Pennsylvania since 2012.
Wait a minute. Something's different.
Yeah. Proud winners of 4 Billy... You could see this coming. 4 Philly Beer Scene Magazine awards. Yeah, I did that right. For Brew of the Year, and three for Brewery of the Year, which are different.
This is all different. I feel like Bill Murray waking up on February 3rd. Like there's snow on the ground. Andy McDowell's in bed next to him, and he's like, something's different.
Oh, you're talking about the end. Spoiler.
Yeah, oh, sorry. You're right. Spoiler alert.
Jeez, man. Come on, I was saving that movie. It's messed up. Did you watch Edge of Tomorrow?
No, but it's in the queue.
You text me at night.
Yeah, I did.
Saying what was that the movie one again? We were talking about?
You know why? Because Danica was like, no, I'm not really sure. And then we pulled up the preview. She's like, oh, I've seen this. Ugh. And I was like, oh, well, then I'll just watch it on my own. So we didn't end up watching Danica. It that night. I know.
Two-time GABF Venus.
Danica doesn't hold a candle to Neshaminy Creek.
2013 gold, 2016 bronze, big assed taproom.
What?
Assed.
I don't understand.
Like past tense. Big assed.
A-S-S-E-D. Got it. Big. It's supposed to be A-S-S. Big-ass taproom.
Taproom. So this used to be a big-ass taproom, but now it's, I don't know, something
since
else.
Since closed.
24 beers on
Ruben's
tap.
Ruben's Brews has taken it over.
It's going valid.
18 are rotating seasonal / limited beers. If you can't make it to Croydon, hit up a second location in Jenkintown called Borough Brew House, which features a full menu and 22 beers on tap, including guest taps from local breweries, meaderies, as well as Pennsylvania cider. Check all of this out at NeshaminyCreekBrewing.com.
There you go. In Jenkintown, Pennsylvania, Neshaminy Creek Brewing's Borough Brew House.
Okay. Okay.
Boom.
So that's the second thing. We finally
all this
got,
time.
We finally got the update.
We called something else.
Wow. One more American Homebrewers Association. Community of more than 45,000 individuals. Wow, that is a lot. Who share a common passion, beer. Since 1978, the AHA has promoted and advanced the most delicious hobby in the world, providing brewing resources, supporting homebrewer-friendly legislation, offering exclusive member deals at breweries and homebrew shops, and hosting one-of-a-kind events like HomebrewCon, which I was at last year in Portland, and the National Homebrew Competition, which I've never entered because I don't want to lose. Join your beer-loving peers at homebrewersassociation.org. And do we have some beer now? Did I get some?
Yeah. Oh, did you not? Oh, sorry. So do you still have the ghost? Do you need more ghosts?
I did have some ghosts, but now I need...
Now we got guava.
Should I talk briefly about the goza? Just to,
yeah, let's definitely hit the goza. Yeah.
So two things. The recipe and then the process, right? So the recipe... My wife, growing up in England, my wife said I grew up on boiled vegetables, so anything is, any sort of spice is pretty intense. So I deliberately went really low on the salinity. The plan was I can always increase from there, but when it turned out, I think it was pretty much in a nice spot. Coriander, we have a local really nice food store, and so I was going around all of the pots of coriander, literally smelling the individual pots. They had like four or five. I must look like a total weirdo. And going for the brightest one. And then I started realizing that it gets really musty pretty quickly. It oxidizes. So what we do now is we crush the coriander actually as we're brewing. Just keep it as fresh as possible to get that lemonness rather than the spiciness. And then just a pretty standard malt bill, 60% Weimann pills and 40% white wheat. Process wise, so being a tight ass bastard, I can say that right. I worked out to brew 170 gallons, so to brew essentially in our small system, it was going to cost about $2,000 for a lacto pitch, and we use Y yeast lacto to start 5335, and so my whole project was to scale that at home. So if I could scale that nice and clean at home, then I felt I could then replicate that from 5 gallons to 170 gallons. But it like gets you focused on the process. Took me three times, you know, third time lucky. So the first two, I like used the cellophane method, one of them. I was purging in a kettle with CO2, one of them. Both of those were horrendous. I ended up using the carboy and was able to purge out the oxygen a lot better with the carboy and got a really nice clean lactose souring with a heat belt around it, keeping it. It was around 108, 110.
Wow.
That worked out really well. And I used that on the first ever batch that we brewed. And then every other beer that we've done that uses lacto is a derivative of that. So it's a been the parent from all things. Yeah, and then from the homebrew side, from the homebrew exercise that I did, it's really oxygen is your key issue, right? So when you're doing
as much as possible.
Goes from your enemy to your friend. Yeah. Just enough and you're fine.
So we lauter, we pasteurize essentially. Just take it to 180. We don't take it to boiling, but I don't want to boil twice. So 180. And as we're dropping it down, we carbonate the wort as we're dropping it down through the heat exchanger to the opposite of oxygenation, right? Mm-hmm. And then when the wort is in the kettle, we essentially get CO2 running over that, but just with enough of a drip, you know, like, so you put it in a bottle of sanitizer at the end of the hose and just where it starts dripping. So it's got some positive pressure. You don't want to like blow up the bloody thing, but like just a little bit of a drip and then, have that running.
Talking about gas.
Yeah.
So just the drip makes me think of, is this liquid CO2?
Bubble. Like a bubbling, yeah. I should say, right? Yeah. And then have that running on the top of the kettle. And then we have different issues with the different brew houses. But in the original one, we found a nice plug to plug up the vent. So it's kind of funny because there was one batch that we did that the plug didn't work or it was broken. So we had to get another one and we didn't get it. So somebody put like paper up the vent.
Mm-hmm.
And I could tell, you know, the off flavor that was created from that was oxygen was getting in from the plug. But then on our new brew house, we've done some fancy things to work a lot better.
So we have a few new constraints there. You know, previously on the 15 barrel, it was a mash lauter single vessel and then a kettle whirlpool. So, you know, essentially we were constrained there to, you know, if we were ever doing these beers, it would just be very time intensive. We couldn't be brewing anything else during that time. Obviously, we couldn't put anything in the kettle. So being able to move to the new brewery and we have a mash lauter tun, combined vessel, a kettle, and a whirlpool, we're actually doing the souring in the whirlpool. And that frees up our kettle to be processing other beers while this is souring for, say, a day or however long, you know, until we get to our pH goal. And what we did was added kind of a louver or a flue to each stack on both the kettle and the whirlpool so that we could kind of minimize oxygen coming down from that. So we have stainless louvers that we can kind of turn. And then each one's outfitted with that ability to kind of keep a slight positive pressure of CO2. So that was kind of our big push there, and it kind of allows us to, you know, not be, all right, we're, you know, doing Goza, so now we can't brew for 4 days. And that's been a huge, you know, deal for us. So doing that other vessel, we basically just send it through the heat exchanger just like we were previously. We kind of use our aeration stone to bubble CO2 just like we were. So the process itself isn't that different, but just, you know, we've gained the ability to kind of, you know, put it in another vessel and hold it. And we do purge the whirlpool before we send it in there as well, just to kind of make sure that as we're transferring, especially if it's with any kind of speed, if there's any kind of, you know, aeration action occurring at the top of that liquid, that's going to be minimized. So we do give it a kind of a purge the morning of as we start. And, you know, we think that's very important for that.
Oh, for sure. I think that's very cautious and appropriate approach to it. In the second vessel, have you ever checked that? I don't know what your lab set up. Have you checked that post-pasteurizing or the 180, you know, kill step? Have you checked that to see if anything is, what's surviving in that? And is it used for anything else or is it just this?
The whirlpool? So we have the whirlpool and the kettle that we can kettle sour in the new space.
Oh, so you're putting in the, like, so you're separating it out just into the whirlpool.
Exactly. Yes.
Yep, and yes. You can continue to brew.
Yep.
So it's over in the whirlpool.
The kettle we had outfitted as a kettle whirlpool combo itself. So it has a tangential port and we can basically, you know, we can keep going at a slower pace from that basically. So yeah. So it's, and everything remains hot side.
Awesome.
And we bring the whirlpool back into the kettle.
Once we get to our target.
Yeah.
Well, it seems to be working great. Amazing beer, multiple award winner.
Oh, it's great.
Awesome.
Just to go back to the growing up of the lacto pitch at home, so to avoid the big commercial pitch. Have we ever discussed that, Jay? Has any other brewer been in here saying they've done that?
Not just lacto. I would find that to be very difficult because you also have to, you know, there's no alcohol, and so you have to fend off everything else that doesn't mind being in a low pH environment, but there's a lot of, I don't know how much sugar, but there's some sugar in there. I always had a hard time having a lacto or PDO-only culture, and keeping that going. So maybe some of the, you could comment on some of the challenges bringing that over.
So again, not just the challenges, but also if you are, I'm always thinking of like, oh, I'm a brewery owner hearing this, and oh my God, what if I did that? Save a lot of money. Is there a limit to the size you could do that? And what are the challenges?
Yeah, I mean, it was essentially doing that process, but before getting to the boil. I'd get to brewing a Berliner Weiss at home, but not boiling it. So in my mind, if I can't do it at home, I shouldn't be able to do it at a pro level, right? You know, I need to get the process right in my head. And
Jay vehemently disagrees. straight to pro.
It was a good process to go through because I dumped two batches in it, right? And it made me realize just how important keeping oxygen out of the lacto sort of environment is. Mm-hmm. Keeping something sanitized shouldn't be too hard an issue for most home brewers or any pro brewers, right? Mm-hmm. Shouldn't be.
Yep. Shouldn't be. I agree.
Is that a viable way then, as a like to save money and just?
I think it's difficult. I think what you did.
I would imagine
great.
It is. Yeah.
The transfers and the propagation. I think a lot of people find commercial pitches and even like yogurt to be more like sustainably clean. But yeah, if you have proper technique, you can absolutely do it.
Yeah.
That first part is a big part of it. Yeah.
At this point, we've been using that same culture now for how many years has that been? Three years. Yeah. So essentially, you know, we've been harvesting it into, corny kegs and we keep all those parts, you know, well separated and well clean and well sanitized. But it's definitely, I mean, it's a concern and it's something we keep an eye on in terms of monitoring how that wort's tasting and, you know, and if obviously we're seeing anything different, I think we have no hesitation to kind of cut clean and start fresh. And but you know, I think recognizing that is very important. It is a challenge, and at some point it probably, you know, it can't go on forever, right? The party's got to end. So like, we'll definitely keep an eye on that.
And, yeah. No, that's true. It's true. But
there's poker going on after, so the party doesn't have
to. It's not there. I will not let it end.
Let's get to this guava beer.
Yes,
that we have, and we were just being about guava. And is this Oregon fruit?
It is
guava. So that's, you know, one of my favorites. Brought home a medal for us. That's great. And I should say, just off the top of my head, Scott, do you know about Oregon Fruit Products?
Never heard of them.
Well,
thanks, Jay. Appreciate it.
I mean, we, you know, unnecessary since Chris is here. But
yeah, I was like, Jay, you don't need to do the thing.
Let me text you, Jay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can text me for the second show and I'll read, or I mean, think of something else. But I just wanted to let you guys know, they're aseptic purees that are easy to use and convenient to store. No additives nor artificial flavors, simply great expression of the raw fruit. They love working with brewers, which I can attest to help us innovate. Check them out, fruitforbrewing.com. Oregon Fruit, they bring fruit
to life. L'chaim, baby. Man, some additive-free, pure expression of guava in this beer.
I love the guava. So
oh, the guava.
It's beautiful.
Have you had, how many like different versions of guava beers have you had?
127. That's true, Jay.
He's prepared.
Ready to go.
It's like Andrew Schwartz style. Like, had all his like, four pages of notes. 127.
And the best is
this one I'm right in front of me.
Jesus, it's good.
The one in our glass, it is good.
No, the pepper aroma, everything that comes out of this thing is indescribable. I mean, it really captures the essence of the aroma of pink guava, but everything else takes over after that. It really is. I mean, hats off to you guys. This is incredible.
Yeah, it's great. The label looks awesome, too. This is Britannia?
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Celador down in L.A. You remember their beers? They sent us a bunch. They were in this bottle. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with Celador out of Los Angeles, but sort of pen and ink. The artwork is gorgeous.
Yeah.
Love it.
Beautiful bottle, beautiful beer. Tell us about this one.
Yeah, so this beer originally started as as a saison that we brewed into two little tiny punchins that we had. And then to each of those punchins, we added a couple forms of Brett. We had Brett C in one, Brett Brooks in the other. And after those went for a while, we pulled them out. We made one beer out of that. And then we refilled Solera style those punchins again. That second batch is what this guava beer is now. We pulled that out and we added it to the organ fruit puree at a pretty high rate for us. You know, it was definitely high that we thought at the time.
Around?
It was around 2 pounds per barrel, which is kind of
common
now.
Thank you.
My cellar manager is listening, and he's like, oh, it's not nearly enough.
Yeah.
As Chris
per
knew.
As, yes, per gallon. Yeah. Sorry, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Still not
And we
Tommy.
Let it sit for 6 months, I think, or so, before we bottled and bottle conditioned it.
Really cool beer. What are you showing, Scott?
Oh, the Celador. Check it out, guys. Kind of looks similar,
yeah.
Doesn't it?
Similar. Same bottle.
Yeah, I don't know. Scott's off on some weird tangent.
I'm just saying, like, they happen to make fantastic sour beer, too. So you're in good company.
It's got a cap on it.
Yeah, that's true.
It's brown glass.
I think there's beer inside.
Yeah, I know you're on it.
They probably got the fruit from Oregon Fruit.
For Oregon Fruit, for sure. It looks fizzy.
Easy to use, convenient to store.
We used two puncheons originally because we weren't sure what blend we wanted of the two different breads. So like that's kind of why we started off.
That's really cool.
In the end, it was a 50-50 blend, if I'm right, pretty much.
Yeah, one of the puncheons were a little smaller.
Yeah.
So not quite 50-50, but close.
Yeah, 55-45.
There you go. Yeah, perfect.
We're sticklers here.
Yeah.
Listen, it's an amazing beer. Juxtaposing it with the one we made at the Rare Barrel, you know, definitely a little more acid to our beer. And this one's it's nice and dry and like a little higher carb, which I like, you know, kind of makes it more, boy, I'd love this with like a cheese and charcuterie board or something like that. It'd be amazing.
It's really like fine bubbles too. Like it's the bottle conditioning, extra carb.
Yes.
Love awesome. It.
Yeah, this is really good. Let's do question. Do you have
sure.
a question?
Yeah, I do.
Sorry, my notes are scattered. So
let's see if I can
make trouble running the show, which I usually do, and Scott does not. So
here, so I'll make
did we
this
hit all our deals.
Sour Beer Blog, Oregon Fruit and Chamonix, AHA, Wine and Hop. Yes. Oh, other beer and shows. Did we do that?
Yeah, we did at the top.
Okay.
We set the session. So
and yes. Oh, you know what I wanted to
and
do?
I was on Hop and Briscoe just right.
Thor wants to talk about carbonation as well.
What?
Let's get to that.
That would be great. You know what? Let me read this quickly for Andy Todd, and then we'll do carbonation. This is for, regarding a new homebrew, a sour homebrew competition. I told him I'd read this down in Australia. Yeah. He said, I'm emailing Sydney, Australia, and the hope to get passing mention on the show. So here you go, man. I believe it might be Sydney's first and only sour and... it's only sour and wild fermented beer homebrew competition. It's called Brew Wild. That's brewwild.wixsite.com/brewwild. I'm sorry for the complex. Just Google Brew Wild Sydney. Going to be held on the 27th of July. Andy said he wanted to provide this competition as a reason for homebrewers to increase their sour beer output and experiment in the style. So good on you, Andy, and I hope it goes well for you. Most of the inspiration to do this has been generosity shown by yourself. Okay, it's smoke blowing. Thank you for that. We appreciate it a lot.
You love that, Scott.
hope you're able to help. I am. Yes. So if you're interested, if you're down there in Australia and you're interested in participating in Brew Wild Sydney, brewwild.wixsite.com/brewwild. Check it out and participate. The way to really grow the style and to hone your skills and to propagate this thing that we do is to participate in stuff like this. So
yeah, quickly, I was just in Sydney a few months ago. Wonderful beer city, very great people. All asked where else I was going, and I said Melbourne, and they're like, oh, okay. Like, you're going to have a great time there. Like, there's a hilarious rivalry that all the Sydney people are very good-natured about. But one of my new good friends, Topher, is at Wildflower Beer Company down there making wonderful, world-class sour beers. Doesn't matter what country you're talking about, he's killing it down there, so we'll have him on the show one day.
I would love that.
He's waiting to come up, but...
I would love that, and not only can we have him on the show, but I told Andy we would have whoever wins this competition, Brew Wild Sydney, we will get their beer on the show and talk to the guy who wins that competition.
No, or gal. So let's talk about...
No can do. So let's talk with the pros about carbonation.
So the carb is something that I've been working pretty heavily on, trying to find the right carbonation, the carbonation
blowing
method.
Blowing bubbles into every bottle.
Yeah. Ooh, it's tough.
Work.
It's a really long straw, kind of curly.
Adam did it all at home.
I hope it's stainless steel straw.
Yeah.
Like cowboy. Yes.
Yeah. We're environmentally conscious around here.
It's bamboo.
I'll cut that out.
Yeah. What? No. We are environmentally
compostable.
Conscious.
Yeah.
Compostable.
But getting the right carb in a sour beer or in any bottle conditioned beer seems to be a tough one. It's something that's given me a lot of like anxiety over the last couple years. Something that keeps me up at night. You know, like, is it going to blow up or is it going to be just a dud? You know,
you nailed it every time.
Yep.
No pressure for the future.
No.
You know, careful monitoring of your gravity, I think, is definitely key on that one.
Awesome.
But is there anything that you do at the Rare Barrel that, you know, you guys...
trade secret.
Yeah. Yeah, can you give me anything here?
Lots.
Yeah.
Let me just say, for off-air, I'll give you everything. Okay. Not that I won't share with anyone else, just this, you know, it's very extensive, but we what has been termed terminal acid shock, or what we call now Taser, terminal acid shock... I don't know, rejuvenation or
oh, an pirates. Acronym. Oh, got it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's good. Taser. Don't tase me, bro.
Yeah. And essentially it's preparing the yeast to go from what it wants to do, which is re-ferment at 4 to 4.5 pH, instead of doing a 3.5, maybe sometimes lower, to 4 pH beer. So we give it one day with malt extract, some of that beer, and some yeast nutrient. Right before. And if it's not healthy the next day, we won't bottle. Because it has to be able to re-ferment sugar in the presence of acidity. Mm-hmm. That's the bare bones of it. But essentially just that one day can give you just like a go, no go. Is this yeast whatever we want to use, whether it's dry yeast or what we have on hand? Just gives you that quick check before you do it. And it's not foolproof, but it's really dramatically increased our quality assurance, and also from bottling day to full carb, it's shortened that time quite a bit. So I would recommend it for everyone out there. I'm sure it's chronicled on Milk the Funk. We have some details on our blog at therarebarrel.com, but also we're changing it all the time, so we're trying to update people on that. And that's something that, you know, definitely not trade secret, because I think once you have a good beer fall through to the end, the last thing anyone wants is for it to go bad. Yeah. Speaking of going bad, Bevo just left the studio. Did we get to that question or no? We did. Oh yeah, no, it was just a read.
Yeah, read. We're at a show break. We got questions and more beers, and so let's do the next one.
Let's wrap it. I'm doing this, Scott. Doing the signal.
It's official.
All right, don't do that though. It's making me dizzy. Thanks to all of our in-studio guests, which includes Ruben's Brews. They'll be back in a minute. Chris as well from Oregon Fruit. Thanks to all of our sponsors, present company included. Thanks to Bevo. Hey, Bevo.
Thanks, Bevo.
Thanks to Scott. Thanks to all you listeners. Until next time, stay sour.
The